Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
When people think of Visa, they think of credit cards. But Visa is so much more than just a credit card company. It's a technology and innovation company that's making digital payments a reality for consumers, businesses, banks, and governments all around the world. At Visa, they have a simple and unwavering vision that can be traced back to their beginnings in 1958 to be the best way to pay and be paid for everyone, everywhere. They know that every Visa transaction is a promise. Whether you're at a food truck, outside the stadium, or paying your fantasy league dues online, Visa wants to provide you with the most secure and easy payment experience possible. All you have to figure out is, where would you like to be? Visa, everywhere you want to be.
Hey y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We begin with Lamar Jackson. All right, Joe Tessitore of Monday Night Football nailed it last night when Jackson tossed his fifth touchdown pass. Tess shouted, "Jackson 5!" He referenced the king of pop, Michael Jackson. In 2019, football is the king of popular culture. The number one show on Fox, NBC, CBS, ESPN, and the NFL Network. And Lamar Jackson is football's Thriller. Mm. No rational person can deny Lamar's ascent to the top of the NFL mountain after last night. After Lamar and the Ravens ransacked the Rams 45-6 inside Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. No rational person, not even Ozzie Newsome, the man who drafted Jackson at the bottom of the first round in 2018, can say they saw this Jackson doing this. At age 22, he's the best player in football, and he's reimagining the way we view the most important position in sports. In 2018, it would have been off the wall to predict Lamar would be Thriller in 2019. I mean, Off the Wall was a nice little album. It sold 8 million units domestically. Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, Rock With You, classic MJ songs. But Off the Wall did not foreshadow Thriller. And truth is, Thriller wasn't Thriller until Michael moonwalked on Motown 25 Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Y'all remember, at the Pasadena Convention Center in 1983, Michael reunited with his brothers and then did a solo performance of Billie Jean. He moonwalked and became the superstar of all superstars. That's what happened last night at L.A. Coliseum. Lamar moonwalked on the Rams. Because Lamar is Thriller, Thriller Night, and no one could save the Rams from the beast about to strike. Mm. After Michael's moonwalk, he developed a massive cult-like following. Every high school in America had a Michael Jackson impersonator. Lamar's the Ravens and the NFL's new Pied Piper.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the system is built for him, and, you know, we built around Lamar, and we go as Lamar go, and Lamar's just one of them type of guys that's just a competitor and doesn't accept losing.
All right, with five games left in the season, Lamar is tied with Russell Wilson at 24 for the most TD passes. On draft day 2018, did anyone legitimately believe Lamar could lead the league in passing TDs? Cam Newton's never done it. Neither did Randall Cunningham, Michael Vick, or John Elway. The only dual-threat quarterback to do it was Steve Young. He did it four times between the ages of 31 and 37. Lamar Jackson is on track to be a better iteration of Steve Young. Mm. Young's career didn't span long enough to be in the GOAT conversation. But in my opinion, Young at his best was the best quarterback in NFL history. I'll take Young's best season, 1994, when he had 35 TD passes, 7 rushing TDs, 10 INTs, and completed 70% of his passes when only a small handful of quarterbacks completed 60%. I'll take that season over any season in NFL history. Lamar is threatening Young's 1994 season. Lamar's going to throw for 3,500 yards, 35 TDs, rush for 1,200 yards and 10 TDs. This is Thriller all over again. We've never seen this. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst James Harrison and LeVar Arrington. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yes.
Is this the best we've ever seen a QB play?
Ever? Yes. This is the best we've ever seen.
I'm going to tell you why,
and I am not a prisoner of the moment. You know, I've been saying this guy is next now for over a year, and I tell you why. Because he's redefining the position. We could talk about excellence. We could talk about near perfection. We could talk about efficiency. But one thing that changes the entire conversation is when you redefine what you do, what others do. You're revolutionary. This takes me back to when I was a young offensive player growing up and defensive player, and I heard of a guy by the name of LT. And I'm not talking about my teammate. I'm talking about Lawrence Taylor. You remember him? Rookie of the year, yeah. Defensive player of the year, his first 2 years. And then all of a sudden, everybody who was playing DN, and I was loving Richard Dent and these kind of guys, and they were like, LT, because he's doing that differently and merging what we thought, which was conventional football, into something of imagination. That's what Lamar Jackson is doing right now before our very eyes. I've been saying this for a long time, and I'm glad this time has finally arrived. Everyone's on board with what Lamar Jackson is doing, redefining that position.
Definitely. I can't agree more. He is as athletic as we've ever seen at that position. He is now developing to where he's reading defensive schemes. He's seeing where he can get the ball out, where he needs to get the ball to. He's throwing the ball a lot better than he was last year. He is a generational talent, just as we had with Michael Vick, except he's out here about to crush the numbers that Michael Vick did. This is something that you're not going to see. Everybody's going to look for this, but you're not going to be able to find this. He is the best quarterback that we've seen so far.
You know, originally I said yes, but as a fan of the game and a purist of the game, it would not be wise or it would not be good for me to go with saying he's the best I've ever seen at the quarterback position.
Well, don't change the question.
Is this the best play
we've ever seen a QB play?
We're
just talking about right now. He got five more games
again,
to go.
Looking at his body of work so far, the things that he has accomplished and achieved is mind-boggling. The athleticism, the IQ, the maturity. I love all of those things. But then I start thinking about when John Candy was sitting there eating popcorn and Joe Montana leads the 49ers to a winning drive in the Super Bowl. I think of what Steve Young has been able to do, or Tom Brady, or even a Dan Marino, in the level that they played at. As amazing as he is playing, Lamar Jackson is, I'm not prepared just yet to say this is the best I've seen in terms of play.
Why
ever.
Not, though? You haven't given a reason why not, other than conventional thinking.
And again, I think I'm a living conventional thinking because, again, when I look at how Dan Marino played in his prime.
How many rushing yards Marino have?
Again.
But is it
all based upon his rushing yards?
No, it's based upon what he's doing at that position, period, combined or compared to what a quarterback is supposed to do.
Agreed.
He has a set of talents that you can't get from a pure pocket passer.
I agree with that, but does that
There's
make
nobody
that the best that, you've seen?
Yes.
You've seen more. If you want to talk about a pure pocket passer, no, he's not the best I've seen. You're talking about his play at that position. Yes. It's got to be.
You know why? It's optimizing the potential. It's taking you from what you have seen to what you can see. And this is like, to me, beyond even thriller, in our lifetime, when I've been at an age where I'm like, I felt impact of something revolutionary, this is like the smartphone. Back in the days when I had a question, I had to go to the library, to the dictionary. Sure. Then I had to say, I already said it that way, where the thesaurus. This is the world in your hand. This is not just saying, I'm Dan Marino stationary, I'm darting you from the pocket. This is saying, if the pocket crumbles, I'm out. This is saying, I'm still an effective passer.
But you're looking
Everything.
At it. But you're,
here's what I would like to say. Because again, is this the best we've ever seen a QB play?
Yes. All right.
And so, I get Marcellus's point about revolutionary, but I don't even feel like that's part of the equation, because those... whether it's a revolution or not, that'll be told later.
Mm-hmm.
all I'm trying to evaluate is, like, we're 10, 11 games into the season. Mm-hmm. This dude is completing 66% of his passes. Mm-hmm. He's only thrown 5 interceptions. He's leading the league in touchdown passes. He's going to be probably in the top 10 in rushing yards. The Baltimore Ravens, to me, are clearly the best team in football. He's given this team all these things. And so if he just completes this season out on the track that he's in, I'm going to be like, oh, that's the best I've ever seen a QB play.
Yeah.
Whether or not, because, again, my previous standard is Steve Young, 1994, mm-hmm. and he rushed for 7 TDs, completed 70% of the pass. I think the second closest to him was completing 62% of his passes. I've seen dual-threat quarterbacks come in and play really, really well. He's taking it to another level. And again, whether he revolutionized or not, we'll have to wait and see. But I just can't. At this point, 11 games in, I just can't
see
what's better.
We're basing it off of dual-threat capabilities. And I'm saying
a quarterback who can do
it
all.
I'm not prepared to say that what Lamar Jackson is doing is better than what I've seen Peyton Manning at his best. I'm not prepared to say that. I'm not prepared to say Joe Montana at his best, I'm taking Lamar Jackson over that. I'm not prepared to say that. And Why? It's a recency effect. Well, because we're able to look at Lamar Jackson real time. We're able to look at him. There may, and I don't want to get off topic, but you can compare pass rushers right now. You mentioned Lawrence Taylor at the top of your discussion point. You can say, oh, look at what Khalil Mack is doing. Look at what Von Miller is doing. I'm not prepared to say they're better pass rushers than guys from a different era. And again, for me, I just look at the purity of what this sport has represented, and I'm just not prepared at this moment with no Super Bowls, no MVP nods yet. I'm just not prepared to say this is the best I've seen. I'd rather wait.
All right, let's change the question up. Because there's two quarterbacks. Last year, we were kind of having the same conversation about Pat Mahomes.
Right.
Who would you rather have, Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes?
You know, that's easy for you. Come on, you ride the bus. You on the bus. Come on.
I was on the bus for Patrick Mahomes last year, I said that was coming, too. I will say, by my description, by my definition, which I'll give you, it's Lamar Jackson. As simply as this. Simple as this. I know what Patrick Mahomes could do. And all of those attributes, I can imagine Lamar Jackson doing it. But everything Lamar Jackson could do, I can't imagine that Patrick Mahomes can do it. So when you make me say, pick one, I'm going to say which one can't do what the other can.
Oof.
And if anybody has an argument to refute that, I am waiting.
I do.
As much as I am passionate about Lamar playing that position the best that he has, I'm still going with Patrick Mahomes because Patrick Mahomes is that conventional quarterback that you're not going to be able to get a Lamar Jackson everywhere you go. And for me, I have a way to defend Lamar Jackson that I believe they haven't really got to yet. So I don't think he'll be able to continually do that once they get up to speed on what it is they need to do.
Oh, you know what Wade Phillips and Belichick and all the other
My thing is this.
I don't know.
I'm going to do as Dick LeBeau had us do when we used to play against Vic, when we played against great RG3. You know what we did?
He gave you a great reference point.
You know what we did?
Not greater than Belichick.
You know what we did?
We smashed
the quarterback. As soon as you go to that run read option, you give that, the quarterback loses all protection. That means I no longer have to wait to see if he hands that ball or if he holds it. Mm-hmm. My job is to smash that quarterback.
Yeah.
And after you hit him about 5-6 times, he's going to say, you know what, let's get out of that and start playing how I'm supposed to play quarterback.
Well, my refutation would be is, again, I thought Steve Young in 94 was the best I'd ever seen. And he did it once. And he had another season that was close. He won another MVP. But I've always contended until Tom Brady got his 6th Super Bowl, John Elway's the best quarterback I ever saw, and he was the best player I ever saw. And the reason why is because, and this is where I think Pat Mahomes has a slight advantage over Lamar Jackson. Pat Mahomes with his arm can touch you anywhere on the field, and that's what John Elway did. I don't believe Lamar Jackson can touch you anywhere on the football field. Patrick Mahomes makes you defend the entire football field with his arm.
Is that an arm strength conversation or accuracy?
It's both. It's arm strength and accuracy.
My man, Lamar is more accurate than Patrick Holmes was last year in the MVP season. He's more accurate right now than the MVP was
last year. I don't think you can call accuracy just based off completion percentage, because that's a two-man deal. The receiver has to catch the ball. A lot of things can affect accuracy. Mm-hmm. I think Patrick Mahomes is a more accurate passer than Lamar Jackson. The look at just their passing attack and how much they feature the tight ends, the running backs, stuff straight over the middle.
Between the hashes, y'all get that?
Where Patrick Mahomes is touching you outside the hashes on any place on the field. Safeties are scared to death of Patrick Mahomes. Defense coordinators are scared to death of Lamar Jackson, no question, but for different reasons. I think, to me, I'm a Chiefs homer, and I'm a traditional quarterback homer to some degree. And Patrick Mahomes doesn't come close to running the way Lamar does, but Patrick Mahomes will run.
That's the difference maker for me.
I'm not looking for longevity at this point. I'm looking for results, because you don't know where your longevity exists in these days. Right. So I'm going with Lamar Jackson. The balance, because these coaches have decided to write it up as we're going to build around what Lamar Jackson's skill sets are, is the reason why I look at Lamar Jackson as being the most impactful player that I would want on my team. You're talking about balance and run, pass, and play action. And if you have a quarterback that has the IQ that's throwing the ball and delivering it the way that Lamar Jackson is, but pulling it down and running at the right times, it makes it difficult when you're saying, well, we're going to hit your quarterback when we come off of that ball. It makes it very difficult to proposition that, because he's going to get rid of it. And then play action comes into it. Now you got Mark Ingram running for 100-yard games. It is very difficult.
That,
it's very difficult to defend that type of quarterback.
His double threat ability in the
But you're not going to take it away.
You take it away if you make it to where you just hitting him every time. Yeah, I don't care. I'm going to have somebody
to make
up for the
dive. You have to get to that point, though. You got to bring the team to that point to be able to make him get hit at that mesh.
One more thing I want to add, because it's a different layer, and I hope we have some meat on the bone another time to talk about this. You said there are not a lot of Lamar Jacksons out there. I just want to let everybody know that most coaches are guilty of that being the reality.
They're at receiver. They're at safety.
We all saw it. Someone got pumped into being a cornerback, running back, and receiver.
Randall Cobb.
And look, you know what comes to mind this summer for everyone who doesn't know what happens in practice all the times? We're done with practice. Mm-hmm. A quarterback challenges a cornerback, and the cornerback throws some plays. We're like, damn, he could throw. Odell Beckham went to UCLA this summer and threw a ball like 90 yards.
Yep.
And we were sitting there like, wow, you know where all the other Lamar Jacksons are?
At other positions.
At other positions. So they are coming, because Lamar has lifted the lid off of that mentality. But that mentality was all being supported by closed-minded conventional thinkers. Blame yourself if you don't see a lot of Lamar Jacksons, because they're out there on the field.
LeVar Arrington is back. We're joined now by Fox Sports college football analyst Reggie Bush. Time now for a big story sponsored by KFC's $20 fill-ups. Order ahead or get it delivered at KFC.com.
Okay.
All right, let's return to Monday Night Football, where the Rams totally embarrassed themselves, losing 45-6 to the Ravens. Jared Goff was totally inept. In fact, he finished the month of November without throwing a single passing touchdown. Sean McVay was labeled a genius when he took over in L.A., but right now the Rams will be lucky to even make the playoffs. Since the epic Monday Night showdown, a shootout with Patrick Mahomes last season, Goff has been downright horrible, throwing more picks than TDs and a passer rating in the 70s. After the game, McVay took the blame.
I don't think it was anything to do with the effort, Lindsay. I think, you know, certainly, you know, I feel responsible for not putting our players in better positions, really, in all three phases. And we'll go back, we'll look at it, we'll see what we can do. There's going to be an element of execution that entails as well. And, you know, we're all in this thing together, but I feel as responsible as anybody.
All right, who looks worse right now, Jared Goff or Sean McVay?
The genius. He's fallen from greater heights, Sean McVay. Sean McVay was on a trajectory, greater trajectory, of greatness than not only Andy Reid, but Bill Walsh. And talking about success, early success, taking a team to the Super Bowl in your third year, as Bill Walsh did, more wins than a Bill Walsh. No one's saying he is Bill Walsh. But you got to understand who he was in that moment, Bill Walsh. First three seasons, 2 wins, 6 wins, 13 wins. Third season goes to a Super Bowl. Last week, we were having this conversation about how to stack up your numbers for perception, trajectory. So now you look at a Sean McVay who's having his worst season in his third year, whereas a Bill Walsh has his worst season in the first year. Mm. So it's going to be perceived differently, even though Sean McVay has more wins. We don't know which way is up. We don't know what step they're going to take forward to rectify this situation. But in terms of Jared Goff, who he was, is this Jared Goff, the Jeff Fisher version of Jared Goff, who we all saw, who was not good, mm-hmm. and we could say he's returning to form, mm-hmm. versus Sean McVay, who no one saw anything else but greatness. So he's the one who's fallen the most.
Well, the first question I got to ask is what has changed in these last 2 years, right? Because for Jared Goff, he still has the same weapons, right? Still got Todd Gurley, one of the best running backs. Ooh. Still got the same receivers back there. And so, to me, I think more of the blame is on Jared Goff for not getting better, you know, every year. Like, one of the things that I saw from Lamar Jackson from last year to this year, what he did was he reinvented himself this year. He knew he had to get better as a passer, and he went out and did that. But Jared Goff has the same weapons. You got the same coach. You got the same play calling. You got continuity, right? If he had a new offensive coordinator or he had some new pieces to the puzzle on that offense, then I might say, okay, maybe something is a little bit different. That's not his fault. Very similar to Ezekiel Elliott, which everybody's asking, what is different? Why is he not playing at the same level? Well, Scott Linehan's not there, right? He doesn't have the same play caller. So there's a little different change in the scheme and in the systems.
Reggie, what's more important than even the coach on the sideline? It's an offensive line. Now, last year, his offensive line started every single mm-hmm. game together to a Super Bowl run. This year, four different lineups already in a short season. Mm-hmm. They've been mixing and matching up front. If you want to play the argument of nothing's changed, the most important thing changed. The guys up front not protecting
but
themselves.
But to that, I would say that a quarterback is always the greatest equalizer,
true.
Right? Whether
true.
You got a bad O-line or a good offensive line, you can get rid of that ball fast, right?
Yeah.
You can dial up some things that protects your offensive line. Right now, I was at the game last night. They was chanting the MVP from Lamar Jackson, the
me
whole
too.
Stadium.
Me too.
Who was more popular when you played, you or Leinart?
I
who was
know
more
that.
Popular? Truth.
Me.
Easily.
Yo,
right
boy.
By landslide.
The Bush.
So I'm going to take your argument. I'm going to use it against you.
Okay.
Where the running back's position has been diminished so much in the National Football League, the reason why I'm putting it on McVay is because you have a lot of the elements that you had last year. Now, not having the line the way that it needs to be right now currently is suffering in the running attack. They're 24th in the running attack. Yeah. They were ranked third last year. Mm-hmm. You know, you had C.J. Anderson and you had Todd Gurley handling their business in the running game. And you know, just like I know, if you have a popular running back that can play the way that a Todd Gurley plays and the way that C.J. came in and played, it takes a ton of pressure off of Jared Goff to have to perform. I put this on the coaching staff because regardless of anything, even with Lamar Jackson, mm-hmm. you have two other weapons in that backfield that can run that ball. Mm-hmm. Being able to run the ball brings a lesser of a pressure to have to push the ball downfield and control the time of possessions the way that you do. It's a lack of running game, and I put that on schematics.
Well, who has the bag, though? Jared Goff has the bag. He's the highest paid net team.
Is given.
And to whom much is given?
But that's
much
not to me. That's a GM's decision.
Well,
that's a
yeah.
GM's decision
and a head coach's decision.
And,
so to me, this is why it's McVay. Mm. I think they paid Goff because of McVay's ego. And we all gassed up McVay's ego all last year. He's the greatest thing since sliced bread. He created Jared Goff. Go ahead and give Jared Goff more guaranteed money than anybody in NFL history. Mm. And it's blowing up in Sean McVay's face. And so, to me, it's clear. Both of them look horrendous. McVay looks slightly worse because he's part of the decision-making that again, I was never, and who am I? I'm nothing compared to these football coaches. But I was just never all in on Jared Goff. Yeah. Great mm. offensive line, great run protection. Looks good. Yeah. Looks mm. like Sam Bradford to
no
me.
No running.
You know? And so I didn't like the decision to overpay Jared Goff. That's a byproduct of Sean McVay. Sean McVay now has, you know, revealed himself to look no different than Zach Taylor and any of these other guys that got jobs because they look like Sean
McVay. But you paid your back.
Well,
you paid Todd Gurley, right?
Yeah, it's weird.
You paid him.
I agree with you, but I don't have the same sentiments about Sean McVay. I think Sean McVay is a great coach. I think Sean McVay has done a lot of great things. One, let's all be real. We don't know what's up with Todd Gurley. Is he hurt? Is he not good? Todd Gurley once before, I remind people, had 25 of 26 games under 100 yards before Sean McVay even said hello to Todd Gurley. Mm. What was that? That was Jeff Fisher and the St. Louis Rams and Todd Gurley. Now we're back to that Todd Gurley again. Just like we're back to the Jared Goff, who was 0-7 and sorry under Jeff Fisher.
That is the missing piece.
So if you look at Sean McVay, he has inflated those guys to levels where they both got paid. But then those same guys are not performing, but we're going to blame Sean McVay. I only say Sean McVay looks worse because he was the genius who got everybody here. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, he can't keep you there if you don't want to be there. And I don't know what's up with Jared Goff, and I certainly don't know what's up with Todd Gurley.
Well, we've seen Jared Goff struggle when he's had to be the one to win the football games. You know what I mean? Last 2 years, they were great when the offense was hitting all cylinders, when Todd Gurley was balling out. He had the play action because you had to respect the run game. Now it's on Jared Goff, and the pressure is real, and now we're seeing him struggle.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Whitlock and Wiley joined by Fox Sports NBA analyst Jim Jackson. Let's talk some hoops. At 15-2, the Lakers have the best record in the NBA. In fact, it's the best start to any season for LeBron since he came into the league. Meanwhile, in Dallas, Luka Doncic is putting up crazy numbers in his sophomore season. He's even starting to draw LeBron comparisons for just how well-rounded he is. When you consider what LeBron is doing at age 34 and what Luka is doing at just 20 years old, it's pretty amazing to see how similar they are this season. LeBron and Luka are sharing the ball as well as they are. They are the top two in assists. Mm-hmm. All right, the question here is 20-year-old Luka Doncic more impressive than 34-year-old LeBron James?
No. No, I'm going with LeBron James right now. Now, much respect to what Luka Doncic is doing, but the game plans, and I'm not just talking about on the court, I'm talking about to the organization, the game plan, and how we're going to endure this marathon is different for Luka than it is for LeBron. Mm-hmm. Let's be real. The expectations for the Dallas Mavericks this year is whatever the hell the Dallas Mavericks can find out and figure out and do versus win a championship. Restore the roar of the Lakers brand. Mm-hmm. And LeBron's doing that with a shared experience. You gotta allow Anthony Davis and others to shine, but primarily Anthony Davis. And we all know how chemistry comes into play. Mm. It could be a tricky thing. So
AD's
when you're
an asset for LeBron.
No, he's an asset, but he's not allowing LeBron in a one-on-one battle versus Luka Doncic in his year to flex fully. Because if LeBron was out there by himself and having to put up those numbers, you wouldn't see the suppressed scoring. LeBron is not scoring at the same rate he could if there was no Anthony Davis there. Where Luka gets on the court, and look, we know Porzingis is a beast, but still coming from the injury is not the same just yet. Luka has the keys and said the floor is yours. And I think that's a different experience. Therefore, you're going to see even better numbers. For me, it's LeBron who's been here.
I'm going to say it's impressive for both because the expectation level of Luka coming into this year wasn't these numbers by far.
Right.
It was he'll take a jump based on last year. Mm-hmm. But the jump that we're seeing now and probably not the heavy expectations of where the Mavericks would be. I thought the Mavericks would compete for that 7th, 8th position coming into the season for the playoff, just because of a healthy Porzingis, an improved Doncic, and also an improved lineup. Here's the thing that you got to keep in mind. It's just like when Michael Jordan played, we get so accustomed to his greatness that we don't appreciate it. Hmm. With LeBron James and what he's doing in year 17 and, you know, in 34 years old, sometimes he gets lost in the shuffle. Luka is the shiny new toy.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's going to be perceived a little bit differently because of what he's doing. He's the shiny one now we look at and say, is he the next best thing? Because what LeBron is doing in year 17 is impressive in itself. Now, that doesn't take away from what Luka is doing in year 2 and the position and what he's put the Maverick in. Because if you look at both of these two men parallel, they impact winning by scoring the basketball, rebounding, and playing, well, I'm going to say defense. Defense is better on LeBron. But assist-wise, that's the key to both of these players, to me. So they're both impressive in their own right, but it's a little bit different for Luka because we didn't expect to see this in year two from him.
Look, the question was framed for the 34-year-old because the 17-year deal is a hard thing, a hurdle to jump over. And so the reason why I'm going to lean Luka is Karl Malone, I think, won MVP at 35. Mm-hmm. And so I've seen someone at 34, 35 play at an MVP level. We've never seen a 20-year-old play like this ever. And that includes LeBron James. Go look him up at 20.
No, he didn't have these numbers.
30.
He was beasting.
10 rebounds, 9.8 assists. We've never seen this from a 20-year-old. It's incredible. And to your point, Marcellus, about Anthony Davis, I think Anthony Davis, it's like, and I'm a Magic Johnson homer. I still think he's the second best player of all time. But he had the great benefit of playing with Kareem. And I think having Anthony Davis, I'm not calling him Kareem, but I just think that creates floor space, that creates opportunities, easy assists, a bunch of other things. That Luka Doncic, you know, playing with Porzingis, that ain't AD. I think having another great player alongside you actually benefits LeBron and makes him able to do this at age 34. I think what – I didn't expect this from either one of these guys. But what you're saying, Jim, is kind of what I agree with. If I had to bet before the season, could LeBron put together an MVP season? I would have said yeah.
Based on history.
Yes, based on history.
Based on history.
Even in year 17. Could Luka Doncic at 20 years old – have his points jump 9, his assists jump 4, his rebounds jump 2.5, and for Dallas to be winning. And, like, you know, who knows where they're going to end up at the end of the season. This is mind-blowing what this 20-year-old kid is doing.
And they're not empty numbers is what you're talking about, but that Luka's putting up. Now, let's peel back a little bit. We know LeBron played in the Eastern Conference. He was able to take a team in 2007 to the finals.
Yeah.
Okay? Luka's path is going to be a little bit different because he's in the Western Conference.
Yeah, harder.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot harder. So we can't judge it based on can he get his team to a championship because that's an unfair comparison based on the conferences and the teams that Luka has to go through compared to LeBron. But that is an accomplishment in itself for a young LeBron James at that time to get the cast of characters he had to the finals. Now, let's compare that a little bit to Luka. Can he get his team to a Western Conference finals? Okay? That, and now you can start to look at the parallels a little bit more in regards to putting up these numbers because, again, these are not empty. I saw Luka last year going into preseason in China, had an opportunity to take a look at him. And my thing was this young man has maturity about him, and I knew he was going to be good, maybe not this good, but I said once he figures out the speed of the game, how to get by guys, because he's not athletically gifted, but he has a savvy about him. He figured that out the second part of his rookie year, and now it's taken off. The sky is the limit for this young man. Now, he has a harder path to take because of the Western Conference, so it's incumbent upon the Mavericks to build out that roster. But what he's doing now at 20 years old, the league has changed, yes. Three-point ball is more relevant than it was when LeBron came in. 15.3 attempts, 3-point per team when LeBron's second year compared to 33 this year. Okay, that's a totally different game. But Luka in itself, you can't take away what he's accomplishing right now and what he's doing in regards of impacting winning for the Mavericks.
Yeah, for me, like that's why I don't want to go apples to apples in terms of the numbers because LeBron in, what, 04, 05 at 20 years old is averaging 27 points when they ain't even shooting threes like that? Hey, okay, but I'm going to let that go. The thing is, what we're doing is overcompensating what is impressive to us, which is admiring and respecting what Luka's doing, because we really undervalue who Luka was as a prospect. Yep. Now, that's on us, not on him. He came over here and said, wow, it's easier to score in the NBA because I've been playing. All we had was big men clogging the paint.
And zone.
He's like, this is easier. So trust me, if you don't think these points are coming, they're coming because the game's going to slow down. What I love about LeBron is there's no surprise. And he's still meeting, if not exceeding, expectations. with the adjustment of someone who can carry the load, mm-hmm. but I'm going to share the load. So I understand that Anthony Davis gives you moments off because you can just give the ball to Anthony Davis. But when the moment's on LeBron, he's still doing something at 34 with the mileage that he has at 34. That's, for me, more impressive than Luka.
What was, and I don't have the numbers in front of me or what, but Michael Jordan was pretty good at 34. He obviously took some time off, yeah. didn't have the miles on his odometer that LeBron does. I'll go back to again. I thought there was a possibility of LeBron being the MVP. A small possibility. I was not someone, I did not expect this, but it was in the back of my mind, like, hey, you want to be critical of LeBron, watch out, because he could put a clown suit on everybody, and he is relocked in, refocused. But I don't know where this kid's landing point is if he can do this at 20 years old.
Right, where's it going?
Where's this going?
Right.
30.6 at 20? I don't think Kobe did this. And he played with Shaq, and so maybe there was no opportunity. But who does this at 20? This dude may average 41 year. I don't know. Yeah. He's a bit more to say, and he's the first player that's ever blown my mind more than LeBron James.
Well, he's a product of what the game is today, and you can't be mad at that. Everybody wants to compare, well, back in the day, this was it. So what? These young men right now that are playing the game are playing at their time. So now they're benefiting from the new rule changes, the three-point line, freedom of movement. You can't be mad at that. And for him to be able to come in, again, his maturity level is what strikes me, because at 14, 15, 16, he played against grown men, okay, in Europe. He came here understanding how to play the game mentally. That's what LeBron and Luka has, is the mental side of the game that allows him to be effective at 34 and at 20 years old.
Reggie Bush and LeVar Arrington are back. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's go back to some Monday Night Football. I was at the game last night. Things got a little heated after the game.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Just a month ago, the Rams moved Marcus Peters to the Ravens, and they gave up multiple first-round picks to the Jags so they could get Pro Bowl cornerback Jalen Ramsey. Last night, Peters got some revenge with an interception, while Ramsey big highlight with his brutal effort on the tackle of Mark Ingram at the end of a long run. After the game, things got heated, and I could hear Peters giving Ramsey the business. I want to ask you guys, did the Rams screw up trading for Jalen Ramsey?
Yes, in my opinion.
Ooh,
well, I'm just not a Jalen Ramsey guy. I think they're going to have to overpay for him. I don't think he's that valuable.
Oh, no, they ain't messed up getting that guy. Yeah. He's special. One, he's special in himself, let alone what his impact has been for the Rams, despite what we saw last night as a team effort. But look, that's like saying Stephon Gilmore ain't great for the Patriots. Like, you know what? When the Patriots saw this same Ravens offense, they got bum-rushed as well. So here's the thing. This team was leading the league in NFL scoring defense once they acquired Jalen Ramsey. Before, they had issues.
Bengals.
Hey, man, the Patriots play bums, too, and then all of a sudden, it's historical.
It's three bums.
You got to beat who
the other two.
You beat who you play against. This is bigger than Jalen Ramsey. It's bigger than Nino
bigger
Brown.
Bigger than Nino Brown.
Bigger than Nino Brown. Ain't nobody told y'all to go out there and pay our quarterback, Jared Goff, that much damn money. And then Todd Gurley deserved it, but has he earned it since that point? So this is the same thing with NFL replay we talked about yesterday. You do something wrong, and then when you finally do something right, we still think it's wrong because you did so much wrong before. This is not about Jalen Ramsey. It's about them mad at Jared Goff and mad at Todd Gurley. Don't blame Jalen.
Yeah, I'm not blaming Jalen Ramsey on this. Jalen Ramsey is still a dog on the field.
Yeah.
Obviously, last night didn't really showcase that, but thank God none of us are judged based off of one game, because half of us wouldn't be here where we are right now. And I still think Jalen Ramsey's a great talent, but if you play in this league long enough, it's only a matter of time before you get got. It happens to everybody. Everybody has some of those games, right? Marcus Peters played great last night, and I loved it. I love seeing the smoke like that, because you don't see that anymore. Too many guys want to get autographed jerseys after games. They want to be buddy-buddy. I love seeing this because
he did that too. He got the jersey and went at the game.
Every Sunday, we see another Marcus Peters highlight. Pick six.
Come on now, talk about it. Talk about it.
What is Jalen Ramsey? I hear the team did well against the Bengals and some of these other garbage offense, Pittsburgh, Mason Rudolph, whatever. Can I get a highlight moment from Jalen Ramsey at some point if I'm on?
Oh, you didn't watch that Falcons game? You didn't watch that Falcons game?
Hey.
It wasn't no highlights, but you watched the game.
I'm going to sum it up for you. Jalen Ramsey is Rocky after he beat Apollo Creed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Got the accolades. Mm-hmm. You want to get paid. You feel like you're the star. Mm. But you looking at a dude in Marcus Peters who's Clubber Lang. And he's hungry. Mm-hmm. That dude trying. He's out there. You can tell he's playing with he's playing with a boulder on his shoulder right now. Yeah. And so I don't know if that sparked him leaving the Rams, sparked him playing and feeling the way that he's feeling. I wonder, will it spark and make Jalen Ramsey step up his level of play after being called out? That was almost like he sunned Jalen Ramsey.
He got called out.
He sunned him.
He got called out.
And when you're an ultimate competitor and a dude like Marcus Peters does what he did to Jalen right there in his house, mm-hmm. right, which was my former house, mm-hmm. you got to respond. You can't be no quiet church mouse after that. You got to respond
back.
Wait a minute.
Now, see, this is why this is why we can't get caught up in the smoke.
Sunning him.
First of all, the leading receiver for the Baltimore Ravens had 54 yards and wasn't even their best receiver. Jalen Ramsey did what he's supposed to do on the football field. He is not a part of the front seven.
Baltimore don't throw to their wide receiver.
Well, then that's my point, so don't put this on Jalen Ramsey. He shut down what he's supposed to do. Y'all want him in a running game now?
Five incompletions and somebody got shut down?
Hold on.
Five TDs and five incompletions.
Hold on. To what numbers? That wasn't on Jalen. I'm saying this on the field, X's and O's, wasn't Jalen Ramsey. Two, since he's been traded, he has two interceptions. Since Peters got traded, he has three interceptions. Look, some of those pick sixes, but still the point is
three. He has three pick sixes.
I'm glad you took it off the table.
I'm trying to cook them now. Help me out, man. But the point is,
I got the stats.
Jalen,
right here,
the only reason they got into it after the game, we all know, collecting evidence is simple.
You don't like being getting done the way he was getting
replaced.
Right.
One, and then when he got it a pick, he's calling out Jalen on the sidelines.
Yep.
After the game, Jalen like, hey, bruh, I'm right here. You ain't got to say it. Cross the field. And then they went at it. But that's still the
clear.
You think Marcus Peters was scared? No, it's not about scared. No. Well, first of all, neither one wanted to fight. Only one dude separated them.
If I really wanted to fight, Jalen Ramsey getting held back by one person.
Stop. If we want to fight, it ain't enough people
Marcus
in the stadium.
Marcus Peters is upset. As good as his team is, and listen, I don't want to offend y'all, but it's going to offend you.
Ooh.
I'm not trying to be in Baltimore over Los Angeles. Hey, I'm sorry.
No.
So Marcus Peters is upset that he's in Baltimore. I'm balling, and I like my team, but I would rather be balling in L.A.
Well, let me just tell you something.
Better than KC.
They got flights from Baltimore to L.A.
That's fair.
When this man goes and collects that Super Bowl ring, there ain't no flight to go catch the Super Bowl ring.
That's a great point.
Yeah. But that's not your desire.
You make a good point.
That's not the point. Like, I'll take it. And being real, the thing is, Jalen is all right. Who's a better corner? Like, I love when we got smoke. Who's a better corner? Who you taking?
Jalen.
I don't care who win no fight.
I'm taking
Jalen. Jalen Ramsey.
Okay.
I'm taking Jalen.
That's fine. Anybody? That's fine. I can't wait to see Jalen Ramsey involved with winning.
Yeah.
Because that's what the game is about. He is a better corner.
They won at Jacksonville. They should have beaten New England in the AFC Championship.
They did win.
Don't act like that.
They should have.
And he played out in elite level.
He was balling.
Yes, he was.
This man is on the best team in football.
Right now.
Yeah, I know. It looks like a storm that's going to win a Super Bowl.
Yep.
I've never seen Jalen Ramsey a part of that. What I've seen Jalen Ramsey be a part is discord, dysfunction, laying down, not playing games, get me up out of here.
Dang.
And now here he comes to Los Angeles.
What?
And hey, that's great. They got some great numbers on defense, but they ain't won squat.
Yep.
And they falling apart. Jalen Ramsey, until he's a part of a winning culture consistently, and he's a part of that culture, Marcus Peters got nothing.
Wait a minute. Baltimore ain't
part of three.
Baltimore with Joe Flacco transitioned to Lamar Jackson. You thank Lamar Jackson, but this whole winning culture.
Oh, Marcus
culture,
has nothing to do with it.
Who?
Marcus Peters has
Yeah. He has something to do with it. I respect that.
Right.
But don't put the losing of the Rams on Jalen Ramsey. I'm saying you're doing the flip to overcorrect for the fact that Jalen Ramsey is a better player. Put it like this. If Jalen Ramsey played for the Ravens right now, what you think going
on? He wouldn't be making the plays Marcus Peters is making.
No, he'd probably make somewhere. More. Probably make more.
Dodge and tackle. Like
get them both on the same
He did dodge the tackle! joined again by James Harrison and LeVar Arrington. Time now for the most fearless conversation of the day. All right, let's head to Dallas, where the Cowboys are preparing for a Thursday night football clash with the Buffalo Bills, while the world wonders how committed Jerry Jones is to head coach Jason Garrett. I say not very committed. I say Garrett is the turkey that could be carved late Thanksgiving night if the Cowboys lose to the 8-3 Bills. In fact, I believe Garrett will be fired Thursday night or Friday morning if Dallas loses to Buffalo. On Sunday, in the wake of Dallas's 13-9 loss to the wounded Patriots, Jones laced into his Dallas coaching staff. He said the Cowboys' poor performance in special teams was a direct reflection of poor coaching. Today, during his weekly radio interview, Jones was asked whether he considered firing Garrett after the Patriots game.
The answer is no, and period. But when you're general manager, of which I am, those coaches are out there at my ultimate decision. It's very much within my realm of purview, if you will, to basically not only be standing there as an owner, but be standing there as the general manager that put the staff together to begin with. And so it's people seem to think that it's particularly harsh to have criticism, and they think that when you look at the other side of the field and call a job well done, that that might mean that that's extraordinary criticism of the job that you've done over on the other side of the field.
I don't hear any part of Jerry's answer as Garrett is safe for the rest of the season. I hear it as Jerry wasn't going to fire his head coach during a short week of preparation. Firing Garrett after playing on a Thursday makes much more sense. You have extra days to adjust and restructure. If the Cowboys fall to 6-6 on Thanksgiving, Jerry will be serving Garrett's body parts across the Dallas area Friday morning. That's a pay your mortgage guarantee. All right, guys. Marcellus, get us rolling. Will Garrett be fired if the Cowboys lose to the Bills on Thursday?
No, absolutely not. From one Cowboy to another Cowboy in Dak Prescott, who even disagreed with his owner, who's still yet to pay him, by saying that their loss last week to the New England Patriots was a setback. And I agree with Dak Prescott. It wasn't a setback. And even if they lose to Buffalo, who is a good team with only three losses, that won't be a setback.
Losses aren't setbacks.
No, you know why? Because it's all about what does it change in terms of your opportunities. Think about it. They'll still be in first place, even if they lose to Buffalo, and a half game up on Philadelphia, which means not only can we still win our division, but we can also still win the Super Bowl. Whoa, but it's a setback. And not setback in traditional terms, setback to the tune of Jason Whitlock and others are saying fire Jason Garrett. He's a lame duck coach. That means postseason success. And Stephen Jones actually came out on record and said, look, we're going to judge ourselves based on what we do in the postseason. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you need to get to the postseason first before you could judge. Oh, you do. So this is a team still on pace to making it to the postseason. You allow him and this team the opportunity to either go out there and make some hay or go out there and hang themselves. After the Buffalo game is not the point.
I agree. He's not fired Thursday. But I will say this. I think he's already fired. At the end of the season.
No matter what?
No, and
no listen, matter what. Come on,
unless he goes deep into these playoffs
there
and gets
go.
To
my point.
NFC championship game,
my point.
Then he is gone. I believe he is fired now without that happening. It's no way he can keep him around. Agreed. He doubled down. I'm the GM, but the coach has got the ultimate call, whatever they're out there. The coach across the way did a great job. I thought the Bible said thou should not covet another man's coach. That's what he was doing. He was coveting another man's coach. Can't do that. I think he fired at the end of the year.
That's very interesting. I agree with you guys in terms of he doesn't get fired Thursday, but it certainly
what about Friday?
It will happen on Friday. It will.
On his day off?
It will happen on his day off.
He'll fire him on his day off.
Nobody will be around the facility. People will still be dealing with the Seraphim and all that stuff. And he'll be able to clear out his office in peace and quiet. Nobody's sitting there giving him
no
a look
sarcasm.
Shame.
What do you think?
Right. That's real. I think if he loses to the Bills, he's done. And here's, because we say lame duck coach. You're saying base it off of the postseason. You're saying at the end of the season. Now that he is speaking of Jerry Jones, is speaking out and clearly showing a dismay towards the way the coaching is, I think that it now sends a message that you can only go so far with the guy that you had leading the team. Again, we had the conversation. If you have a group of players that can make excuses based off of what the owner slash GM is saying about the coaching staff, you've already lost the ability to be able to effectively lead that team and tell them what to do. That ship has sailed.
Man, hold sailed. Yo, I'm never going out with y'all.
Friday.
Look,
right, it'd be a bad night. They're going to defriend you tomorrow.
Dog, let me tell you what this
How
is.
How you going to lose your job on your day off?
Look, if you can still go where you want to go, what your aspirations were in the beginning of the season, what your goals were, which is win a Super Bowl, how is this fatal to lose to the Buffalo Bills? Let me tell you why.
But it's not.
This is nothing but a moment that you have to respond to. This is basically we all going to hang, and our Uber is coming, and then right before we're seeing 1 minute, it cancels. Y'all the type to go in there, oh, man, we ain't going nowhere. We can't do nothing. And I'm the one that's sitting there saying, let's call another one. You know why?
That's what I'm saying.
No, y'all thinking
that. Call another Uber.
I'm talking
y'all about, trying to erase the whole app.
I'm trying to erase the whole app. You know what? We got next week. And we still in first place. And then guess what? We still going to get to this point.
You can't beat a good team.
Who?
That's why your circumstances don't change. You can't beat a good team.
The 97 Giants, and I remember, go back in time, when they were struggling to make the playoffs, and they end up making the playoffs.
Tom Coughlin.
Beating the, hey, man, Tom Coughlin is amazing. The same Tom Coughlin, they tried to run out of town a couple times before that. Okay, respect. Here's the thing. You have to build up the adversity.
That was Jim Fossil that did that.
We love against all odds, but we hate when the odds are against us. This is the moment the odds are against them. But this is how you set up a moment of against all odds, and they come out victorious. Play this out. The movie's not
He has
over.
Paid a Super Bowl caliber football team.
In his opinion.
And they can't win the big game now. Why would you expect
them? But they're making the playoffs.
Because the NFC East sucks. They're horrible. I would agree with what you're saying
if Jerry Jones said anything like that. But Jerry Jones owns the team.
Yeah.
And Jerry Jones isn't saying, hey, all our goals are still out there. This isn't a setback. He's not saying that.
No.
He's saying, this is unacceptable. I didn't like the coaching. And again, he's undermined this guy's ability to lead this team.
Yeah.
And so we can all have our opinions. I'm just looking at what Jerry has done. He's undermined Jason Garrett. And so if they lose to the Bills on Thursday, who he doesn't think is as good as the Patriots, and so he's like, no, we better win this Bills game. What's he going to say?
Do you think Jerry Jones believes that Dallas can still win the Super Bowl this year?
No, but I don't care about that. But he does.
But if he does care that they can't win the Super Bowl this year and he's paying Super Bowl dollars, then why would it be rhetorical to say he's going to lose his job?
Because Jerry can also be surprised. Jerry can also be wrong. Jerry Jones was wrong on Jimmy Johnson. So if I'm using Jerry Jones' rationale.
How was he? He hired him. I don't know.
How long did it take for him to win a Super Bowl? No. Jerry, you should not dismiss Jimmy Johnson for a share of credit. That shouldn't have been the situation. Mm-hmm. But look, I'm not going to dive into those details. The point of it is, if that's your rationale to get rid of a coach who just won two Super Bowls that fast, and then maybe that's your rationale to say, I'm going to fire this guy before we lose our
opportunity. For far less, right?
Far less. But why not finish this season is my conversation.
Because you've given up hope.
That's what it sounds like. His comments after the game is like,
he's lost hope. He's lost faith.
But you haven't lost the team. And your leader Your leader of your team say, I disagree with you, Jerry Jones. Dak Prescott went on record.
That's smart, because he don't got that contract.
Man.
You ain't hear Ezekiel Elliott
say it? Smart to disagree with the owner when you ain't got a contract?
Listen. It's smart to agree with the head coach, because that's the man.
I'm going to agree with the owner. He's going to be there forever.
I mean, that's fair. That's a fair. It's a valid point.
I don't care if he said...
If you looked at me
falling.
So strong,
I
wouldn't even disagree with you if I disagreed with you.
You're going to agree with Jason Garrett.
I'm going to agree with Debo.
You are not agreeing with Jason Garrett.
When he leaves, I'm going to be disagreeing again. That's all I'm telling
y'all. I'm telling y'all the team is with Jason Garrett. They even are responding and pushing back on because they
are the reason why he's on the hot seat to begin with. They can't play well enough to keep the man off the hot seat. So they should be supporting
and
him.
And look, if I was a player, I would be with Jason Garrett too. Because once Jason Garrett's removed as a new head coach, it's like now the burden is on you. This new coach, we ain't got no excuses. I done found me a new coach. It's on you guys. And the next people to be putting on blast is you players. And if I'm Dak Prescott, I want no parts of anyone saying on Thanksgiving, we're 6-6. Because our quarterback really isn't that good.
Oh, that's...
Somebody can say that. Ah.
Whitlock and Wiley joined once again by James Harrison and LeVar Arrington. Let's return to the NFL, where Baker Mayfield went from snapping at reporters to throwing some darts. The Browns have won 3 straight, and during that span, Mayfield has thrown 7 touchdowns to just 1 interception. As it stands right now, Cleveland is just 1 game out of the playoffs, and they still have 2 games remaining with the winless Bengals. But the question here is, you buying the Browns' turnaround?
I'm buying the turnaround, obviously, improvement, but I'm not buying them making the playoffs. So depends on how you want to parse those words right there. But basically, this team is going to look better the second half of the season as they are than they did in the first half of the season when they were 2-6. Top 10 in multiple offensive and defensive categories. If you talk about scoring, total offense, points per game allowed, total defense, etc. But it's not going to be enough, I feel. But I respect what they're doing. They found a different formula. They turned the corner in terms of the futile efforts and production that we saw before, but I think it's a little bit too late. Mm.
Give my money back. I ain't buying it.
You ain't buying it?
No. No, give my money back. I ain't buying it. They were losing to the Dolphins, but they ended up beating the Dolphins. That's the Dolphins. Mm. Mason Rudolph gave them 4 interceptions. This team right here, we could beat a team if we get 4.
All linemen right here.
Okay. You're right. And Buffalo came in there. They probably just surprised them and got them by 3 points.
I smell that.
And they didn't even really feed Frank Gore like they should have. Mm. So I'm not buying this at all. They're going to go up here to Pittsburgh, and they're going to be back to the old Cleveland Browns. We got Duck at quarterback, and that's what we go do.
All I got to say to that is you gave me all the teams they played against. Therefore, you're not buying it. But then I tell you the teams they're going to play. Bengals, Steelers. Cardinals.
What you saying about the Steelers?
I'm not buying it. To that point, they got the 3rd quarterback in there.
The 3rd is the best. That's the highest.
I give you that. He's nice. But the point is, if you're going to use schedule against them, you got to use schedule for them.
They also got to play the Ravens.
Yeah, that's going to hurt.
That's going to hurt.
That's going to hurt.
You buy
that's why I say them.
But they beat up on the Ravens now. That's one of the few teams that had some success.
You bet.
I'm buying it. I'm going to buy it until I don't buy it anymore because they have the talent that represents them being able to change it at
you
any
still
given
buying
moment
it after they lose to the Steelers this weekend?
They haven't lost to the Steelers yet. And again, I'm buying it until I'm not buying it anymore because, again, they have the talent that is representation of a team that should have not started 2-6. But being at 3-0 since week 10 says to me that maybe for one strange moment in time, we could say a team had an opportunity to start to jail. I mean, God forbid, in our fast food industry or fast food society, that a team doesn't have an opportunity to learn one another and improve as a team moving forward. So I'm buying it until I'm not.
I'm not going to buy it because I think this weekend, Mike Tomlin, they're going to get him. Mike Tomlin won't win Coach of the Year this year. But he maybe is doing the best coaching job. And I expect their defense and Minkah Fitzpatrick and T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree to put something on Baker and the Cleveland Browns this weekend. I think Mason Rudolph was killing them. I think going to Hodges, they had no choice. I don't think he's going to hurt him with the turnovers. And I just think the Steelers defense and Mike Tomlin is going to have this team on at the ultimate level emotionally. I think it stops this week, and once they lose to the Steelers, it doesn't matter what they do the rest
Steelers
of the
Steelers got everything to fight for. We number one.
Yeah,
number six,
but I think emotional.
Change them pronouns on this weed. That's
sorry
why you
about
ain't
that.
Saying it
sorry
right.
about that. Like, number 6 seed, I got a lot of friends over there, so it's sort of like I turn French sometimes when I talk about this.
They handily beat the Browns. The Browns handily beat the Steelers the first
four
time.
Four interceptions.
And they have more than enough reasons to play hardcore football.
Wait a minute.
Y'all
act like the Steelers. This ain't no Roethlisberger out there. There's no James Conner for sure.
The defense
is balling.
Number one defense
and your third quarterback.
Fitzpatrick got there.
My point is just to push back on you. Not that point was not mine. Here's my point. This team. You chill? You good?
Go ahead. You got
the,
it.
The Cleveland Browns.
Move on and get some space. Get some
Cleveland
space.
Cleveland Browns. This is why they turned it around.
Yeah.
We're 0-3 at home. And now they're 3-0 at home. Mm-hmm. They're 3-0 in the last since week 10. They won the last three. Two, you know what Baker Mayfield's been doing since they went on that three-game win streak?
Less commercials.
Only second to Lamar Jackson in terms of passing touchdowns. Think about it. So y'all don't want to say it's a turnaround,
but you're not putting Baker on Lamar's level.
Don't you see, Will, that's your own reliable.
We always talk about head numbers.
Since week 10, Baker, three wins, Baker, and I'm second to Lamar in passing touchdowns.
Baker owns the head. Baker Mayfield owns the head-to-head game.
Okay, he's second to some other dude out here.
Say he's second.
Don't say it's two.
If y'all don't think that the Browns are going to be fueled up to beat the Steelers.
You don't think the Steelers are going to be fueled up to put something on them?
I love that you say Steelers, by the way. I mean, as a fan, I love that you don't say Steelers. You say Steelers.
It's Steelers.
That's because you kind of...
You don't have just one.
We share that.
It's Steelers.
If you don't think that the Browns are going to be pumped up to play in this game, you are sadly mistaken.
They ain't playing at home either.
You're sadly mistaken yourself.
Okay, let's say this then. Yeah. If we have two highly emotional teams, one coached by Mike Tomlin, one coached by Freddie Kitchens.
Follow the talent.
Which one do you think is going to be overcharged and do dumb things?
Follow the talent.
I like that.
I'm following the talent.
Me too.
The talent ain't been doing nothing for him all year.
Uncle Jimmy's here. We'll get to Lamar Jackson in a second. But first, who's your big dummy of the day? Surely the guy that can't be me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Big dummy of the day. Go to the person that said, if the Dallas Cowboys lose on Thursday, Jerry Jones will carve up Jason Garrett and serve him to the Dallas area. Nephew, do you ever stop thinking about food?
No. All right, let's return to Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, honest man.
His first appearance on Monday Night Football was one to remember. He threw for 5 touchdown passes this week. Lamar faces the top defense in the NFL, the 49ers, Marcellus.
Yes.
Do you think San Francisco can slow Lamar Thriller Jackson?
No, I don't think they can. They have one blemish, one loss, and that was to Russell Wilson, who, same style of play in terms of mobility, but not even as good and as exciting as Lamar Jackson. Remember Kyler Murray gave them fits? Second half, especially. Kyler Murray had a perfect second half against this same 49ers defense. So, no, I don't think they can slow him down.
Yeah, I don't think you can slow him either. You can only hope to contain him. Uncle Jimmy, you have any thoughts here on Lamar Jackson?
Okay, unlike you, nephew.
Yeah.
I'm able to admit when I'm wrong.
Oh.
See, last year, I came up here and made fun of Lamar Jackson. I said he was playing in Kansas City. I said he was making fun. I said he was calling plays, looked like he was saying, Kunta left, Kunta right. Now he's just talking about, Kunta, straight up your guts. And here he comes. It just ain't fair, man.
Huh.
You know, you said it's Michael Jackson Thriller.
Yeah, Michael Jackson Thriller.
Man, this is O.J. Simpson coming out with a self-entitled album called Killer. It's unbelievable. It's a damn fairy tale.
Lamar Jackson. Here, man. Hold on. Clarify that. Lamar Jackson's a fairy tale.
Lamar Jackson is a fairy tale. And if the NFL don't stop lying to these little black kids, look here, man, they got every little Latavion Jenkins in the inner city thinking that just because he can outrun a dog and throw a brick, he can be a quarterback in the NFL. That's not how this works. Look, I told y'all before, Uncle Jimmy too old of a cat to be clawed by a kitten. I done seen this before. And y'all done seen it before.
Where?
Look, Lamar too good to be true. Y'all think I'm playing. Okay, remember about a few years ago during the BET Awards? And they said, the winner is Tupac Shakur. And remember Tupac walked out and accepted the award?
The hologram.
Black folks lost their mind. Ah, Machiavelli live! That's because we had never seen a hallelujah-gram before.
A hologram. You're saying Lamar's a hologram.
Look, man, I'm just telling you, I know what it's like to be an inner-city kid with a fantasy. Look, my mama told me one time I was 6 years old, she told me she gonna introduce me to my daddy.
Oh, boy.
Man, I'm damn near 70, and I still ain't met his ass. Hell, my Dessa pulled this on me. She told me on my birthday, she told me it's gonna have a menage a trois for my birthday. Had me, I'm in bed, I'm waiting. Here she come in the room, man. She had on some scantily lingerie, had some champagne, had a cart, and I'm like, oh, it's going down. She pulled up the cart, man, it got meatloaf, gumbo, Roscoe's chicken. It was delicious. I ate it. It just wasn't what I was expecting. See, this is my point.
Yeah. Yeah,
I get it. That's the lesson, y'all.
What?
Some things are just too good to be true. That's Lamar Jackson.
I hear you.
You're not buying it, huh?
I feel it.
All right, let me get to my approval rating.
Fugazi.
For Lamar Jackson.
Oh, man.
Can't change the job performance and remains at 25. Jumped him up 3 more points in all-time greatness in anticipation of him winning MVP.
Yes.
Showed up to his post-game interview in his football uniform.
Woo.
Jump him up a point in authenticity. Woo. This dude's all football.
Oh,
88
man.
GOAT status.
Damn. In his uniform?
Yeah.
Y'all need to hurry up and get that boy a new contract so he gets some great gear. Look, 95. I love the dude too much. Been driving this train in America. What's going on?
Yeah, this is crazy.
He's MVP this year. He's MVP this year.
This is that's crazy. 58% All-Star rather than GOAT.
It is the hologram.
Hey, college football fans. Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.